Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Aux Cord Friday. How would you grade Ryan Favreau's aux cord so far? Don't think about the fact that he is an important member of this team.
I mean, it seems like it's from a slightly different vintage.
I've known zero of the three songs we've played.
I like the one that he led with. The biggie that he led with was solid.
That was a good tune.
This one I'm finding
more difficulty. I literally could not tell you what this music is. You know, Blake would be like, oh, this is...
Oh, Blake would have this.
This
down.
Is the weather... Kins.
The Weatherkins?
I don't know. There's some, the Weather Thins, or he would know who this is, unfortunately.
The Wafer Thins.
The Wafer Thins.
Nah.
It's fine.
Listen, it's a tough job. I remember the first time I had to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, do I want to go all in on One Direction? Do I want to spread it around?
Like One Direction, the band?
I mean, there's some decent One Direction. History, one of my favorites. But
the next time you're on, we'll get you to do it.
You're putting yourself out there a little bit.
We're getting to learn a lot about
Favreau. And he's embracing that. That's the thing too. Music's always, I think I can't be talking about age really, but he's a little older than both of us. And the music in your prime years is what you like the most and hold on to forever.
He just texted us. Ha ha ha. I'm old.
Not that old though. And the biggie was a great start.
But it is Friday. Enjoy. Text us in 590-590. As always, hit us up on our socials. Check out the podcast. Subscribe, download. Let us know the best sporting event you've ever been to. We're going to sprinkle those in throughout the show. But our next guest, Sunday, September 11th, Steelers, Bengals. He's on the call.
And it's your favorite.
It's my favorite. So happy to be joined by our favorite fourth member of the show, Charles Davis, NFL on CBS color analyst. Charles, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing? Another season, right?
It feels so good to be talking about real NFL season. No more preseason stuff. We can really talk about the storylines that matter with you. I know week one, you've got Steelers, Bengals. Let's just start with your excitement level, first of all, to just get back in the booth and really get immersed in this season.
Yeah, Ailish, it starts with preseason. And I know people look at me kind of funny because it's real easy to dump on preseason football. And let's be honest about it. I've done my fair share of, oh, yeah, preseason, blah, blah, blah. But at least when the preseason begins, you know, okay, it's football season. The regular season's coming. Yes, things are going to shake out. No, the starters aren't going to play much in the preseason. You certainly hope to have it when the regular season begins. But you do get to start to see maybe some new people emerge. Maybe some of those draft picks that we've heard about, talked about, do they flash NFL skills that you projected? Are there any disappointments in the early going? Quarterback controversy start to kick in, even at backup positions. I mean, we did the Steelers-Lions. I did that with Greg Gumbel and Evan Washburn last Sunday. And the story for the Lions, believe it or not, besides being the darlings of Hard Knocks, one of their big stories was, who's going to be our backup quarterback? And they played... Tim Boyle, they played David Blau. Neither one of them seized the position, in my opinion, and I said that during the broadcast. But I thought Blau was a little bit better, so I figured he'd be number two. And sure enough, they cut Tim Boyle. And then either hours later or a day later, they cut David Blau as well. They were like, no, neither one of them. And they just started over. I think they signed Nate Sudfeld to be their number two. But because preseason is only 3 weeks now, guys, three games, there's actually an extra week before the opener, which probably allows teams to feel like if we want to bring someone new in, we can get them acclimated quicker because we got 2 weeks worth of practice before the opener instead of just a week. So that's kind of a, or 9 days or 8 days or whatever it is. So that's kind of a precursor, but it does kick up your excitement. And then you just never know how it's going to shake out or play out.
Yeah, I feel like this extra week is like almost an excruciating wait, though. I wasn't sure. Are we waiting longer here for it? And it seems like we are. And I think for teams, that's probably a good thing, not rushing back into it and getting their ducks in order and making the right roster decisions. But maybe a little over-analysis. I mean, they've known who their week one opponent is for a long time. Does that apply to broadcasters, though? I mean, I'm sure you've known about Steelers-Bengals for a while. Are you so in so deep into these two teams that there's some over-analysis on the analyst part as well?
I think that's a terrific question. And the reason I say that is something that I've fought in my head for years about when do you really begin to prepare? You know, do you start super early and rip, you know, then taper off? Do you just, because sometimes when you start super early, you can't get enough information and you just keep diving for information. And then things you thought 15 minutes ago, you've changed your mind 15 minutes later with something new. You're exactly right. What helps me, and I can't speak for everyone, but I get tempered because I do preseason ball. I do the Tennessee Titans local team package and then typically one game for CBS. So you go through a swirl of it, but you're not really focused on your first game. I can start to focus on my first game now, and this is to me about the right amount of time, because there's an old adage in sports, and boxers talk about it all the time. Whatever you do, don't leave your fight in the gym, meaning don't overtrain. Don't do too much there. Make sure you have enough that when you get out there for showtime, you're ready to go. So I think this 2 weeks is probably good for the teams. And it's good for us, because I know this about teams. They will introduce concepts about their opening opponent depending on what the organization is throughout practices, but they don't really specifically get involved with a team until this time frame.
I'm sure if there was a little extra video sessions or a little extra video involved, excuse me, don't mind that Joe Burrow is on that video. He is a treat to watch. And of course, you've been diving into his game here lately. What are your expectations for Joe Burrow this season? A little better protection coming off his Super Bowl appearance, though, nonetheless. What do you think the ceiling is for this guy as he heads into his third season?
Yeah, no ceiling. No way I'm ever going to put anything that's a capper on a Joe Burrow, because he's exceeded everything along the way. And even when he didn't win the job at Ohio State, you know, people will go back to that, right? Oh, my God, how did he not win the job at Ohio State? Look at what he's turned out to be a pro. I get it. Dwayne Haskins, God rest his soul, who left his way too early, he was picked to be the quarterback then. And he threw for 50 touchdown passes in a season. So it wasn't like they made a bad decision. It just didn't work out there for him. He found his groove at LSU and obviously continues to ascend. I think he really touched on something big, though, the protection for him. I mean, he was sacked, what, 70 times last year, 77, whatever that number was. That didn't even count how many times he was hit. Let's do a microcosm. The playoff game against Tennessee where they beat the number one seeded Titans in Nashville. He was sacked 9 times in that game officially. He was sacked 11 times when you had penalties involved. But the key to everything, when he came out in the draft, the big conversation was about the size of his hands. Were they too small? Did they measure 9 inches like at a minimum everyone wants, blah, 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 blah. And he had that great tweet about, you know, I really appreciate the sympathy. I'm thinking about retiring because, you know, my tiny hands. Ha, ha, ha. He never turned the ball over in that game. Think about that now. All those hits, all those things, and I can tell you from doing the Titans preseason package, that burns them. That became a goal for the offseason. Guys, if we're going to get that many sacks, the ball's got to come out to turn it into bigger plays. Joe Burrow protected his team last year by taking all those hits and not turning it over. So what did the Bengals do? They went out and signed Lyle Collins. They brought in Alex Kappa. They tried to shore up that offensive line, and that's a big, big deal because they cannot allow him to get hit as many times as he did last year.
On the other side of the field, the Steelers, a couple questions regarding them, the realistic expectation for them this season and the firm grip possibly on the starting quarterback position.
Yeah, let's start with the quarterback because that's always the subject, right, Ailish? That's where everyone goes, and it's understandable. We do it ourselves. I do think, and they have not announced yet, and as Mike Tomlin said, I'll announce it when I get good and ready to announce. You guys aren't going to force me to do anything early. My opinion is that Mitchell Trubisky starts the opener. I think that they brought him over there specifically for that reason, signed him in the offseason before they drafted Kenny Pickett. But did Kenny Pickett make it a very difficult decision? Absolutely. I thought he was really, really, really good in the preseason. He was calm. He was poised. He made throws in the right area. He finally pushed the ball downfield a little bit in last week's game, because before everything was dart throwing. But this one, he pushed downfield, and boy, he threw the ball in the perfect spots for his receivers. This kid, he just assumes the position is very natural in what he's doing. But I do think Trubisky will start. He played well in the last preseason game, especially the 2-minute drill down the stretch with some big time throws and movement. But part of it, I think, guys, is that offensive line has not shown, you know, the improvement that was expected. They were bad last year. They weren't great the year before. If I told the two of you that over the last 3 years combined, 21 season, 20 season, 19 season, the worst rushing team in the NFL aggregate is the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, you're like, what? Because that's not Pittsburgh's reputation. It's not their MO. It's not what we think of when we think of the Steelers. They've been the worst rushing team in the league for the last 3 years combined. And it didn't look better in that last preseason game with their starters playing the entire first half. You know, and they brought over James Daniel from Chicago to play guard. They brought over Mason Cole from Arizona to play center. They thought the second year of Dan Moore as a starter at left tackle would be better. Chuck Okorafor at right tackle. And Kevin Dotson's supposed to be a people mover at left guard. He beat out Kendrick Green, it appears. That wasn't great. They actually have made some moves since the final cuts to bring in more offensive linemen, and that's not a good sign heading into the season. So that would be my biggest concern with Pittsburgh right now.
And yet, I mean, with that history that you just gave us and the fact that they had a limited quarterback last year, still managed to have a pretty successful season. I mean, how did they continue to churn out reasonably positive results despite having clear warts?
Well, it's a great point, and here's where I don't think Ben Roethlisberger got enough credit. I thought the focus on when it finally is going to be his last year, and that was finally resolved. You know, watching him go down the stretch, we all wanted to throw flowers in his direction because of the career, and deservedly so. Where I don't think he got enough credit was, while they weren't playing what I would call full potential of the offense, because Ben, at that stage of his career, pushing the ball downfield wasn't a true strength of his. His ability to get the ball out quickly to receivers, let them make plays in open field, that was where the offense had evolved to. But he also won a bunch of games for them and kept them in games with his veteran savvy and his ability to make a key throw at a key time. I mean, you go back last year and look at them in the fourth quarter. I think he brought them back about from fourth quarter deficit 8 times for wins last year. Okay, so people say whatever they want about Ben, he's not there, what have you. Will Mitchell Trubisky and Kenny Pickett be a guy that, because I think the Steelers team is going to play a lot of close games, are they going to be the ones to make those plays down the stretch, that big third down throw, fourth down throw, if you go back to the game in Baltimore to end the season to help Pittsburgh get into the playoffs? When you see those kind of plays being made, Ben knows where to go, who to go to, the right time, the anticipation, timing, all that still has to happen, has to be proven by Trubisky and all. And I just worry about Najee Harris at running back. He had 381 touches combined last year, rushing and receiving. I think he'll approach that number and maybe exceed it this year. But based on that offensive line in preseason, some of his best runs might be getting back to the line of scrimmage. And
Charles,
that's not what you want. You want to be able to have him charging it and attacking
guy.
It. So we'll see.
I got him in fantasy. I don't want to hear this, Charles. You're making my heart hurt.
I'm sorry, Ailish. You
should have seen the look on her face.
You know that. you know that. You know I don't want to tell you any tales. He's still going to get his touches and his number. Remember, Ailish, go back to last year. The offensive line struggled mm-hmm. last year, too. He still ran for over 1,000 yards and caught, what, 71 balls or something like that. So he's going to have all of that. Just will that translate into bigger plays downfield? Because Pittsburgh was a little bit limited in that last year. Not a lot of explosive plays.
The big news yesterday, Charles, was Russell Wilson signing a 5-year, $245 million contract with the Denver Broncos. Expected, obviously, Denver's not, you know, acquiring Russell Wilson to not pay him. But how does this impact the Broncos from the perspective of salary management and their team building process as they try to take advantage of the window that Russell Wilson will provide?
Well, bottom line is they got to go for it early. When you bring in Russell Wilson, I know Russell has talked about playing like Tom Brady until he's 45 or 50 years old, right? That is his goal. I remember him saying when we went to Denver, you know, okay, now we're ready for the next 10 years of our thing. That's wonderful. And he might very well do it. The man takes care of himself. He trains for it, all that good stuff. Tom Brady is an extreme outlier, as we know. So they still have to get it done in a tough division, and it's really now with a brand-new head coach and all those other good things. They do have good receivers. I think the offensive line has been fortified. I like all of that. Here's the thing to keep in mind. All the money in that contract is not guaranteed, and I think that's a win for the Broncos. That'll help them when they need to acquire other people. That'll help them have a little bit more flexibility. But, yeah, you brought in Russell Wilson to try and win a championship. As you said, you didn't bring him in not to pay him. You know, you didn't bring him in to just say, okay, here we go. That was the expectation there. They kind of had to do it to put him on par with the other quarterbacks of his level. And he deserves that now like any other team. You've got to maneuver around the cap a little bit. But they have a lot of pieces in place already. And I think that that helped them with giving him that contract, too. They already had guys there and under contract.
Charles, how do you think Lamar Jackson felt waking up yesterday, stretching his arms over his head and looking at Twitter to see Russell Wilson's new deal?
I would think that he shouldn't be surprised. I mean, by this stage, he knows what it is. And you notice how, Ailish, you notice how Baltimore has made sure the rest of us know that he's been offered a deal, mm-hmm. paid more than, who was the previous one that signed? I forgot who it was, but somebody. Like, it paid more than that. That's what we offered. So all of that is out there. And I'm telling you, if we could ever go to a league owners meeting and see 31 owners glaring at Cleveland for what they did with Deshaun Watson, it would be a sight to behold. Because they really threw everything out of whack when they gave Watson the type of money they did, the guaranteed money that they gave him, considering he was possibly going to be suspended and got it as we expected. It wouldn't have been out of line for him to be gone for the year. I think they're fortunate it's 11 games, but to me, that might very well have blown their season anyway, unless Jacoby Brissett somehow rallies them in the first 11 to a 6-4, 7-3 record. We'll see. Bottom line is that whole salary structure is way out of whack. Lamar Jackson, he knows what the money is. I'm really not sure where the holdup is at this point. Unless he's going for a number that's just really, really out there. And I don't know how many other places would be willing to pay it. Baltimore is all in on him. The way they run offense, the way they fashion offense, the way they acquire players, it's all to run offense with Lamar Jackson leading them. Do you think 31 other teams would do it exactly the same way? There would be some, but it wouldn't be as many as with a little bit more conventional quarterback. And the reason I say that, is because you can get those other pieces easier to put around a quarterback than you can when you're doing everything through Lamar and you're holding your breath. Because if he gets hurt, your season's blown. Oh, by the way, 6-2 last year when he got hurt. And they missed the playoffs by one game because they had to try and play with Tyler Huntley down the stretch.
So we went through all the divisions earlier this week, and the only one that stood out as possibility that top to bottom they could maybe win the division, make the playoffs, do some damage was the AFC West. And in order for that to be true, that every team could potentially win the division, that means Vegas would probably have to be a viable option to, in that murderer's row of teams there in the AFC West, actually win it. Maybe it's a stretch to say that they can, but what do you expect with Derek Carr, Davante Adams, that really explosive offense? What do you think they can accomplish this season?
I think where they have to go is the defensive side of the ball. Because for them to accomplish all of those things, they've got to get some key stops at key times. You know, you've got an ace pass rusher, Max Crosby, right? They acquired, what's his name from Arizona? Chandler Jones. So that's another ace pass rusher for them. The secondary has really struggled over the last few years. But they decided to cut Trayvon Mullen, so that let him go or trade him. So that tells you that they weren't pleased with what was going on there anyway. Jonathan Abram is a strong safety first-round pick that's not a good defensive back. He's more of a linebacker. And I'm wondering if that's going to happen with them because his coverage ability just isn't there. Okay? Will he hit you into next week? Absolutely. But the way the game is going, as you guys have seen, that's not been your primary worry. Your primary worry is, do you have a defensive back who can cover? Jamal Adams comes to mind with Seattle. When he gives you 9.5 sacks and big plays like that, boy, he certainly feels worth it. Last year he had 0 sacks. Is that worth it from your strong safety? Is that worth it from a DB? I don't think so. So to me, my biggest concern with the Raiders is going to be on defensive side of the ball. I really was an advocate for Rich Bisaccia staying, Mike Mayock staying, because of the way they held that team together last year, but I knew that was a pipe dream. But I don't know that they could have done better by getting Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. I liked where that team is headed. I think Denver is the team that has the most to prove in that division, even with the addition of Russell Wilson. The Raiders were a playoff team last year. The Chargers should have been a playoff team last year. Remember, they lost to Houston in Week 17. That made Week 18 mean everything to them when it never should have come down to that.
Charles, a pleasure as always. We're so happy that NFL season is back. Even though you love the preseason, we want the real season. Appreciate you joining us this morning. We will chat weekly.
I look forward to it. So great to talk with you guys again. I think love preseason is probably a little strong.
You can tolerate it.
Preseason, knowing that the love is coming second week in September.
Love it, love it, love it. Thanks so much, Charles, and enjoy this weekend. Or next weekend.
All right, you guys do the same. Take care.
Thanks.
Okay, exactly. Hey, listen, we got college ball. We'll watch.
Oh, that's right.
We'll be all right.
All right. Thanks, Charles.
Bye, guys.
Did we say that he was our favorite guest enough?
I think we may have mentioned it.
I feel bad for every other guy. I mean, he's got a soft spot in our heart, but every guest is our favorite guest, okay?
I mean, I do think it's warranted. I've only been around for a couple Charles Davis discussions, but like, you feel the warmth through the microphone.
You sure do. He's a guy that I would love to go to a diner with and have some pancakes.
I wonder if that'd be great.
Right?
I wonder if
it just seem like that's an event you would do with Charles Davis.
If Charles Davis is ever in Toronto, we got to make it happen.
Oh, you bet.
I feel like you'll make it happen.
And he's offered to meet us in person. Even Paul and Wasega Beach just texted in. Charles Davis is back. Happy Friday.
Blue Jays locked in. Charles Davis back.
Damn.
It's got to be September.
It has got to be September.
Hopefully.
After we get into something to chew on, we're going to talk a little bit. Raptors as well. Wow, they're back-ish. Some NBA news yesterday and how it relates to the Raptors, of course. But before we do that, it's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. Yum, yum, yum. Pancakes at a diner. Serena Williams has obviously had... the week from what? An incredible showing here at the U.S. Open. I don't even know how to put it into words clearly. She's back in action tonight, prime time, center court. I don't know how it's not much must-watch TV for you. But a really cool fact and something to chew on is she might be changing still the face of tennis and increasing the viewership worldwide. When you thought that she had already stapled her legacy, according to new data, Twitter's usage was 365% higher during Serena Williams' match on Tuesday night.
Really?
Really. I'm not making this up.
Compared to what? Like the previous
day? Like a regular evening on Twitter. That is incredible.
Ways to measure impact.
30% of users who tweeted about her on Tuesday night had never tweeted about tennis all year.
It's kind of scary how much Twitter knows.
Yeah, actually, that's part of the chew on is now everything is information. But 30% of the people that were tweeting about Serena Williams had never tweeted about tennis before. So that's an entirely new fan base or people that are bandwagoning, but whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, you're now invested in the Serena Williams journey. And maybe you're getting way more interested in tennis, in women's sports, and everything that's going on with this GOAT having an incredible run.
Mm-hmm.
And that percentage more of just user engagement online, it's pretty incredible. Honestly, I was shocked when I saw this.
Over under tonight. Now, you generally think over
because, hey, this story is going to grow and more people are going to jump on board. But it is a Friday night. Are people going to be on the tweets on a Friday
maybe
night?
Maybe not as much.
So you might lose a little bit of that. But I feel like, I mean, it's going to be a big event.
I will say, on the other side of that, 47% of the tweets about Serena Williams came from outside of the United States. So this is a global appeal now.
Definitely.
So different time zones could be beneficial to this question that you're posing.
That's true. A lot of people be sleeping, but I guess it didn't matter.
Four of the five most retweeted tweets since the U.S. Open started are about Serena Williams on Twitter. Like, mm-hmm. Twitter-wide, four out of the five most retweeted tweets, including Tiger Woods' tweet, the one where he quote-tweeted the GOAT.
That'll help.
That's just, it's pretty incredible.
It is pretty incredible. It's a great story. It's kind of what we needed here. There's like a Twitter, it's sports off-season, obviously, aside from baseball. Mm-hmm. Twitter off-season, too. Like, I kind of like to take the summer off tweeting. Take a little break. But this is the thing that can bring everyone back.
Sports never sleep, Justin.
NFL's generally that. People, how does that compare to, like, the Monday night or the opener, Bills, Rams?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Serena would have the edge.
I hope so. No, I don't hope so, but.
That's the thing about football.
That's when you need multiple screens, people.
It's like football is this different category. It's like a non-football story versus a football story because the football story is just like on another level of everything. But Serena right now, compared to everything else going on, is certainly on
top viewing. Jason from Markham texts in. Mitch White was pitching as Serena played. Coincidence? I think not. Have a great weekend.
That wasn't a coincidence for us.
You know what? That didn't hurt the numbers.
I came into the night thinking I'm going to be mostly Serena here, but
got
to start Mitch White. Got to talk about Mitch White tomorrow. See a couple pitches.
We were quickly reminded of the Mitch White experience.
But bad on ball after bad on ball. I was the return button was not being used that much. We'll just say that.
But that's when I put it on my iPad and it's just there like muted and I look down sometimes. I'm like, oh, that's what's happening. Back to Serena. A couple more texts in at 590-590 about your favorite sporting events. We're going to sprinkle those through, ones that you've been to. Scott from Oshawa, Grinder, night shift, beer store handling, keg deliveries. He just wanted to make that clear what he's up to.
Okay.
Thanks, Scott. We appreciate the work you're putting in. Best sporting event. Mom took me to Tiger Stadium when I was 13 to see my hero, Ken Griffey Jr. He made an epic catch against the wall directly in front of us. My mom and I are in the background out of a famous Griffey photo that was in Sports Illustrated the next week.
Well.
You have to tweet that to us, Scott.
You can plan these things, but
that's amazing.
Generally they don't work out like that, where you not only see your favorite player do something, but right in front of you, plus you got that lasting memory.
Oh, that's so
on SI
cool.
Forever. That's amazing.
That's, I think, my favorite so far of the day.
When a plan goes as planned, like the Stroman meeting that we saw earlier in the week, where I think they came from England, they got to meet him, and of course Stroman's like,
cool.
Maybe you caught him at the perfect time, and now he's going to a game in Chicago, I think, or that family's going to a game in Chicago. When it works out, it's great.
Robbie from Cayuga. I was one of the performers of Get Tricky Jump Rope Group that got to perform the gold medal game for men's basketball. O2 Arena was packed in the most insane 5 minutes of my life. This is in London for the 2012 Olympics.
Wow.
How do you get to be in the Get Tricky Jump Rope Group? My only experience with jump rope was, remember Jump Rope for Heart? Did you have that?
Yes.
That was my favorite part of the year. Other than the Terry Fox run, I got to really like put
your
on a show.
Favorite day of school was?
I got to like
skipping
be
rope.
An athlete and show people up in grade six.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at jump rope, but it gets tiring.
What was the other
quick.
One, Terry Fox run?
Terry Fox run,
So it wasn't like a nice thing, community thing? You were like trying to win the Terry Fox run?
A little bit. You used to go around like you got a popsicle stick for every time you did a lap. And at the end, I'd just have the most popsicle sticks. And I think I like... got a popsicle or something. Anyway.
Little Timmy in the class just resenting every moment of it.
I was never in a jump rope group like Robbie, but it's pretty sick. I'm going to look up Get Tricky. Maybe they have a team still.
Must have tremendous calves.
Tremendous calves. It's true. And the only other time I jump rope was before hockey games, which was just out of necessity warm up.
Was it?
Well, sometimes. Like,
I wonder how many
I,
things are actually at a necessity.
Well,
when
you
got to
get your body going. What, are you just going to stretch?
You're probably doing the, what is it called? Sewer ball? You're probably doing
spike
that too.
Spike ball. We were spike ball.
Played spike ball.
Hell yeah. Wow. We had spike ball divisions, like the A division, the B division. I was in the C division, but I worked my way up.
So I was at a, like a 1 day little bachelor party when I came back last week.
Yeah.
Oof. And there was just like, there was spike ball set. Like that was one of the afternoon things. We're at a cottage. And like there was, it was like just divisions. Like the good players just wanted to play each other. I'm like, can we like mix it up a little bit here?
No, you don't want to play with beginners in spike ball. Like that game, I don't care. I'll learn somewhere else.
No, but like I started feeling comfortable. I'm like, can I just get a game with the, you know, in the A court?
No, but you got to try out. You have to try out.
I thought I was trying out.
You got to send in the tapes and get scouted.
So what division were you in? Sorry.
I started in C and I made it to B.
So how did that graduation, wait. The one that had all the kid who had all the popsicle sticks didn't get to
well,
A
this
in
is,
the spike
this
ball?
Is when I was playing professional hockey with Olympians who play spike ball all the time.
I get it.
They're better athletes than me. In the B division, I was pretty impressed.
I thought you might have been able to get up there at some point.
There's still time. Who's not in the B division of our guests? Paul Jones, Raptors radio analyst at Sportsnet 590, The Fan, is joining us to talk a little bit. Donovan Mitchell, how does this affect the Raptors and the Eastern Conference? That's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Happy Friday, everybody. The vibes are excellent. This is a great song. Fabro, turn it up. Did he text us in and switch up his playlist because we were ripping on him? Okay, good though. It's 590-590 in the text line. Check out the Fan Morning Show podcast. Our next guest, it's been a while since we heard his voice. It's been a while since we had some NBA actions just around the corner. It's Paul Jones, Raptors radio analyst at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jonesy, how's it going?
I'm good. How's the summer been? You know, it's we're into September, and we're in that part of the year where I love it and I hate it at the same time. It's going to get cold, and I can't golf, but it'll be basketball season, so one offsets the other, I guess.
You know, we don't get much time off. We grind all 12 months of the year, Jonesy, but I feel you. It's getting cold. My walk to work every morning at 5 is starting to be bundled up. It's not a great feeling, but it's nice to have some sports back in action. So we got you on first to really talk about that Donovan Mitchell deal that happened yesterday. First time we really had some NBA action. What were your initial thoughts on kind of a sneaky little blockbuster?
Yeah, everybody was waiting for it to be New York, and with Donovan's kind of connections to New York, everybody thought, you know, that's where he's going to end up. So this was classic in the sense that they always say trades that are rumored rarely happen, and trades that happen are rarely rumored. Like we didn't hear anything about Cleveland being involved with Utah, and bang, here it is. So for me, it just meant Cleveland got better. I mean, they were a surprise last year. Everybody, including Eric, kept waiting for them to fall, and they did slightly. They had to go through the play-in scenario, but they're going to be challenging for one of those seven-game spots. They're going to be challenging more than they did last year for a permanent spot in the playoffs. And man, did they get better? They really, really did. To me, when you look at what they gave up, with the exception of Markkanen, it's all potential. I mean, they played really well without Colin Sexton, so they didn't really miss him. And Ochai Agbaji he was a good college player, but we don't know what he's going to do in the pros. And then the picks are all potential also. So, I mean, in that sense, it's Markkanen, somewhat of a proven commodity for Mitchell. And I think Cleveland's going to be much, much better this year. They're going to be somebody you need to look out for.
How much better, Jonesy? Can they compete realistically for, you know, a spot in the Eastern Conference final? Like, are they that good that they can be in that championship tier, or is it more or less moving up a couple rungs in the standings?
No, Justin, I think we're talking potential. And look, we don't know what other moves have been made, and no games are played and won on paper. But, you know, look at their core four when you talk about the guys held over from last year, the way Garland's playing. He and Jared Allen were all-stars. And Mobley was runner-up for Rookie of the Year. They thought it was going to be his for most of the year before Scotty Barnes kind of stole it at the end, if you talk to people in Cleveland. Then you add an established star like Mitchell. That's a good big four. It really is, but it depends on what the chemistry is like and how they come together. But, you know, don't underrate J.B. Bickerstaff's coaching. So, Justin, I think you got to look at them as a potential Eastern Conference champion.
Is there egg on Utah's face here because it was Cleveland? You know, there's some reports that there was a better deal, I guess, potentially on the table from New York involving R.J. Barrett. Did they miss the opportunity, that is the Utah Jazz, to get the best possible return for Donovan Mitchell?
Well, they did pretty well. You know, if you look at Utah, they're all about going forward. R.J. Barrett would have been a nice piece, but you know, with his big deal, and there were some loopholes that you had to close to get that deal done. They're about the future and moving forward. And Danny Ainge is doing his best Sam Presti impersonation now, collecting draft picks with what he got for Rudy Gobert and what he got for Donovan Mitchell. And then if you're Mike Conley or Bojan Bogdanovic, you got to be thinking, okay, am I next? And what kind of picks or futures am I going to yield? So I don't know, Justin, if you can say that the deal was better. This is the one that happened, because at the end, deals always get, I don't know if I say messed up, but they always get changed at the end when people want to throw a little bit extra in or make a slight tweak or change. And it alters the deal. So I think they did pretty well in this one, because it's all about future draft capital.
Jonesy, we always want to put a Toronto spin on it. How does this affect the Toronto Raptors?
It deepens the East, right? Look how deep the East was last year. Mm-hmm. That's another team to fight with. They were a team, Cleveland, like Toronto, last year, that nobody expected to play that well, and they did. And I think, you know, the cat's out of the bag. There's going to be no sneaking up on people if you're Cleveland or if you're Toronto. And they're a team like Toronto. I don't think people are giving Toronto maybe the same respect right now as Cleveland because of this deal. But, you know, they're a team that I think they're right there with Toronto. I mean, you know, people probably don't look at Toronto as a championship contender, but they're a why not in the East. They're a year older, a year more experienced, you know, a year better when it comes to chemistry and cohesion. You look at the improvement of guys like Scotty Barnes, Precious Achiuwa. You know, I think Toronto is a team that's sneaky good too, and nobody's looking at them. So, you know, Cleveland and Toronto, they're going to be in that fight again for one of those top six spots. And really, when you look at it, you know, Toronto's a play away from maybe coming back and winning that series against Philadelphia. So, you know, Cleveland's right there. If they don't get injured at the end, maybe they're in a playoff series too, and not just bowing out in the play-in.
Raptors actually opened their season against Cleveland, which was already going to be a pretty good showdown between two of the best rookies in the league. Now with this added impotence, what's this game going to be like October 19th?
Very spicy. it will be an opening night matchup that a lot of people will have their eyes on. The problem is, you know, going forward, when you look at it, that game's not going to matter. That and, what is it, $3 now to get on the TTC? That it won't matter. 325.
Inflation.
Oh, inflation. it won't matter. No game in October or November matters when you get down to the playoffs in April and May. So it'll be a good regular season lid lifter, though. It will put a little bit more interest in it, and right away, you've got implications around a tiebreaker in the first game of the season.
Last one for you, Jonesy. As you prepare to spend less time on the course and more time, either in front of laptops or at courts in the coming weeks and months here, what is your sort of prevailing thing or the thing you're pondering the most when it comes to the Raptors for the 2022-23 season?
Well, the internal improvement, Justin. I would say last year people around the team knew how good they could be, while a lot of the pundits and experts had them, they were an afterthought. They weren't even considered in the playoffs, and they grabbed the top six seed. What's it going to be like this year? What's the internal improvement going to be like? What new pieces can Nick find that Masai and Bobby Webster have brought in that he can take advantage of? And, this team's not going to sneak up on people anymore. They've got a target on them. And can they stay healthy, and how good can they be? Because this year will really tell a tale, because there's no sneaking up on people. People are looking out for Toronto this year. They're getting, I think, much more respect, and we'll see how good they could be. So I'm excited. Again, I don't think anybody's counting on them to be great. Some people are looking at last year as a one-off, and they snuck up on people. So I'm really interested to see what shakes down. And with Pascal Siakam, too, the fact that Rico Hines is now an assistant coach, the UCLA mafia in full effect in Toronto, with he and Earl Watson and, Pascal's agent, Todd Ramazar, and joining Nick Nurse and a great coaching staff with, John Goodwillie and Nathaniel Mitchell and all of them. I just Nate Bjorkgren. I just think that this is one of the better, underrated coaching staffs with Nick Nurse. So I'm also excited to see what they're going to do.
Most definitely. Should be a lot of fun. But Jonesy, golf season can take you all the way to basketball season. So make sure you still get those rounds in.
Got to bundle up, Jay. I'm talking, I take a lot of heat for this, but I got two seasons, pants and shorts. And I'm fast approaching pants, storm gear, toques, looking like something out of the British Open in about a month from now. So, yeah, we'll go as long as we can.
Yeah, it's a little crispy out there in those mornings, but I actually kind of prefer that. When it's too hot, it's fine, but
no, you're right.
I don't mind
you're
throwing right. a sweater on and golfing. That's a lot of fun, too.
I hear you. We're in the wheelhouse right now, late April till, second week of May, and then from now till the end of the season. Like, if you're going out this morning, I went for a walk. It's 14. There's a little chip in the air there. So not toque weather yet, but it's getting close.
No, you can convince me. You can't give up in the summer. You can't give up on golf season. Thanks, Jonesy. We'll talk soon.
All right, gang.
So we were going to talk a little NHL after Jonesy, but text line is desperate to know how your C&E experience went last night. So please dish on the rides, the food.
Let me just start with
the, what'd you call them? The sham that is those those games. Scam.
A scam.
Sham is the wrong.
Both.
Scam is
it's
the right.
It's all of them. First of all, I bought an advanced ticket, which is a great decision because those lines are nuts. I show up. It's the advanced unlimited rides pass, right?
Okay.
Dished out some good coin for that.
Undeterred. We were talking about screw loose, but yep. You're undeterred.
I went on zero rides because in my lifetime of existing, I have never seen lines as long as I did last night at the CNE. I am not exaggerating this. There was not one line that was less than 45 minutes to go on a carnival ride. I have never seen that many people in one place in my life. I was stunned by the attendance. Congratulations to the CNE that made $1 billion last night. Because you could not even walk. This is a Thursday night before the long weekend, so I assumed that maybe it would be the less busy of the next 4 days. I went quite late, 8, 9, 10 p.m. I was planning on, you know, I got all my work done. I was like, I'll go enjoy myself. There's no Jays game on, no Mitch White. And I went on zero rides, and I was so disappointed because I really thought, like, I could sneak a couple in there. I got the all pass to go on. No. Mm-hmm. Even the people that got those speedy fast pass things, there was at least a 20-minute lineup for the fast pass lines.
How does that even work? How do you have two separate lines?
Well, because,
like, does the peasant line just not even move?
The peasant line, the peasant line goes, like, I think the fast pass goes, you're up, like, you automatically get, like, you know, 10 of you go, and then they let the other peasants in. Man, I'm just, like, stunned silent when I saw it. So great, didn't go on any rides.
Okay, so no rides.
No rides, and people had message about the rides being, you know, a bit sketchy. That's not, I would have went on them. I was so excited. I saw clearly so many I wanted to go on. I didn't get to go on the Ferris wheel. I could, you know what? I got to the point where I was going to go down the slide.
The lineup line for the slide.
That there was not even an opportunity to go on the slide. Next, I went to the food hall when I got there because I hadn't had dinner yet. Chaos. So many options to choose from. Honestly, I was overwhelmed. And the lines there, understandably, were quite long. Like, shout out to the workers who are grinding. Like, they're just flipping patties, rolling pitas, like, deep frying this. It was, and it is sweaty in that food hall because every single grill is cooking at full heat. Mm-hmm. You walk in and honestly, you're coated with a layer of grease. Worth it. It took a while to figure it out, but I went to this bacon place and everything's, like, wrapped in bacon. And I had, like, a burger wrapped in bacon that had bacon in it. And you know what I'll say is, wasted my money. My first ever corn dog, waste of food. If you eat corn dogs, friends off. We're no longer friends. Corn dogs are gross.
Friendship over.
Like, give me 6 loony dogs over 1 corn dog. They're stupid. Like, what are we doing
but
here?
But isn't the general rule that we agreed on yesterday that deep fried is better?
Not corn dogs. They're dry.
You didn't get, like, a sauce?
I got a bacon-wrapped corn dog, and I thought it was awful.
Okay, that's a little
but
aggressive.
But honestly, okay, everything else was good. Okay, so everything else
was over, under.
I tried to try something new. I won't have another corn dog. But the other thing I had, the bacon-wrapped burger, obviously elite. Then I went
so the bacon-wrapped burger and the corn dog, I just quickly, over, under 7.5 total strips of bacon consumed?
Over.
Okay.
My heart's feeling a little sticky this morning. Then I exit the food hall, and I'm walking around the grounds. Well, yeah, walking is you're just more bumping into people. And I hit up the games right away because I'm fueled up. I got to tell you, that ring toss on the milk bottles, biggest scam in the league. There's not one. I stood there for 30 minutes. Not one person ever won a prize. Not one ring went on a bottle cap. I put that video on my Instagram. People were like, this is the tip. No, there's no tip. It doesn't work. Okay. Scam. I watched people shoot hoops for a while. And I know JD mentioned that.
Hard rims.
Yeah, but I saw some people sinking shots. So there were some athletes out there yesterday. I think that the dart balloon game is the easiest game at the fair or the CNE. Loved it. Smashed that.
Hard to doctor the balloons.
I tried I thought it was elite. I tried the pitching at the plates, like you shatter plates with a ball.
Okay.
I think I need Tommy John this morning. Justin, I went so hard. Honestly, my shoulder is like from shoulder to elbow.
Was there like...
No, it wasn't about speed. It was about accuracy. And I screwed up because I was like, I'm going to break these plates into oblivion. And I missed all 3. And I honestly think that I need to see a sports physiotherapist this morning. Arm is hurting.
Any stuffed animals won?
No, 0 stuffed. I won money though. So then I went to, there's games where you can win real money.
Crazy,
Justin.
Crazy about the odds.
Crazy about the odds was me at this game where you just put hard cash on either over, under. Okay, it's so good. So there's this wheel. There's a spinning wheel and you throw balls in it, right? and they give it to the people on the stands to throw the ball. So fun. Honestly, I would have stayed there all night. And you throw a ball into this net, and it goes down on the spinning wheel, and wherever the balls land.
So roulette.
Yeah, there's two numbers, though.
Like roulette and basketball together?
Yes, there's two numbers, and you add the two numbers up, and it's either over 7 or under 7. And you place $5 on over or under, and if it's over, they double it. If it's under, you lose your money or whatever, right?
I can't believe you're straight up gambling at the
CME. I was straight up gambling. Like, I was such a degen. So I played that for a while, and I was up
money. I feel like
we're
putting them on blast. Like, do they have an OLG license?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't care. It was awesome. Then there's one where you put like a 3-to-1 odds if you put it on the $7, like, because that's like really hard to get $7 on this.
Sure.
Or seven, the number seven. And you get 3-to-1 odds.
Craps too.
Never hit that one, but I tried. Then there's a bunch of other games where you, once again, put real money, like a toonie. There's limits, though. Toonie to $5. They're not letting you gamble like $50. You put a toonie.
No sharks at the table.
You put a toonie on the year of the month. Month of the year. A month of the year or Christmas or New Year's. Like, that's all the options. And so I smashed July, which is my birthday.
So Christmas is like 00 or whatever?
Yeah. So you just pick whatever. Okay. July never won, so it's disappointing. Christmas won 2 times. I'm like, this is a scam. Christmas won twice.
I'm surprised people weren't playing Christmas.
No, I don't know. Just you weren't thinking like that. You want to put it on your month. There's the guess your weight one. I never went to that one because that's depressing. I watched people do the hanging. So there's a bar and you have to hang from the bar for 2 minutes, like a chin-up bar.
Okay.
Not one person did it. I was obviously so intrigued to do it, but I just.
How would they make that more difficult?
It's, you know why? It's because it's a thicker bar, I'm sure. They definitely grease it up. Like, they're up there rubbing butter on it.
Okay.
Speaking of butter, I had corn. It's corn. A big lump with knobs. It's got the juice. I had corn, roasted corn, unreal. I went straight to the corn station. So, oh my God, there's so much to talk about. I got corn. I got a frozen lemonade, which was really good. I got those two things I mentioned. I might have also shared a massive poutine with like a bunch of random toppings. I feel sick this morning, but I had to go for it. I didn't try anything like stupid though, because the lines are really crazy, like for deep fried stuff and cheese curds.
In for a penny, in for a pound at the CNE.
I lost a lot. Like, I left just gouged in terms of money. Everything was expensive, but I had a wonderful time other than the fact I couldn't go on rides. But I would recommend going this weekend. Just be prepared.
But the only thing, like the only takeaway, is that you were slightly underdressed.
Oh, they're
like a nightclub there?
Yo, last night was King Street West going out clubbing on a Friday night. EFFs, Citizen, all those spots. It's quite the scene at CNE. Like, it's a...
I feel like I underrated the CNE a little bit.
Yo, I just wore jeans. Which was extremely underdressed for some of the occasions.
Exactly what you think you should wear.
I saw people wearing high heels strutting around the CNE. Good for you. Like, I went for the comfort over the aesthetic, but...
Not in the peasant line.
Not in the peasant line. So that was my CNE recap. Thanks so much for everyone that texted in wondering. I hope I gave you some insight.
Check it out, but don't get the speed pass.
I don't know.
Final takeaway?
Also, lots of babies there past like 11:30 p.m. Like Grinders. Children in strollers. Matt Stairs. Our favorite former Blue Jay.
He could break some plates.
He's joining us next after the break. We talked to him at the Jays Care Golf Tournament a couple weeks back. We never got a conclusion on how he played. We'll start with that, and then we'll talk some Blue Jays in this season. And he is also a diehard Habs fan. Ooh, we'll get into that. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.